today on Shipments from Shiloh. As a follow-up to episode 14, Greg and I revisit his Store Champ season. He recaps his experiences, and we discuss possible deck changes. Finally, we brainstorm which IDs and strategies he'll try next. All this and more on Shipment from Shiloh. How ya oda do ya, runners, and welcome to Shipment from Shiloh, a Netrunner community podcast. I'm your host, Graham. Joining me today is my buddy, Greg.
Hey.
Greg, it's great to have you back on the
Thanks.
Show.
I'm excited to be back.
Yeah. So, we're doing a follow-up episode to something that we did over the winter. Episode 14, called Selective Net Decking, was all about you and I trying to figure out what kind of decks you wanted to bring to the upcoming store championships that you were going to.
Yeah.
Because you were kind of a newer player and you didn't really know what decks were out there or what you could maybe like pick up and do reasonably well with. And so this is kind of the bookend episode to that, because that was all about preparing for the store champs.
Right.
And now we have gone to the store champs.
We have.
And it was super swell, I thought. let's talk about how those store championships went in our first segment called Special Report. Awesome. So, you went to two store championships, is that right?
That's right.
I would remember, because I was at both of them. So, Greg, the first tournament was in Kalamazoo. Am I correct in that?
That's right.
Kalamazoo, Michigan. It's a real place. It exists.
Home of Kalamazoo College, I assume. I guess I've never actually been to the campus.
No, but yeah, that's true. It is home to Kalamazoo College. So, nailed it. Also, Western Michigan University is there. And also, Fanfare Games off of Westnage Avenue.
Exactly.
So, Greg, which decks did you bring to this this year's store championship?
So, I brought, for the runner, I brought a Valencia Estevez deck. So, her ID just says, when at the start of the game, the corp gets one bad publicity, right? So, ideally, you make, I think, relatively frequent ones runs. You can take advantage of that basically free credit each time.
Sure.
And then I think it's common to add mining accidents in your deck so that you can increase the number of bad publicity they had. It wasn't like a spicy Val deck. I think it was a pretty common deck list. It's pretty similar to the top Val at Worlds, probably, I guess, right?
There was a couple really good Val lists at Worlds, and this was basically one of those.
Right. Like, main money was, like, Sure Gamble and Dirty Laundry with Daily Cast, which I think are relatively ubiquitous.
Yeah.
And then we had Liberated Account on top of that, because we were playing Anarch. But outside of that, that's basically all the money in the deck.
Sure. And then the mining accidents to give you bad publicity, which kind of turns into economy. But at the right. same time, like, your breakers are kind of crap, so the bad pub just kind of makes up for the crap breakers in some
right.
ways.
I mean, so, like, the cool thing about bad pub, I thought, was that because all of my breakers are those conspiracy breakers, right? The icebreakers you can install from the heap?
Yeah.
That means I can install them, like, during a run, and then at least I can put bad publicity towards installing those cards.
Yeah, the other day I had someone get up to like 3 or 4 bad publicity against me. He runs my hand, and I res a barrier. So then he installs the paperclip, and then just lets the run end. So he installed his paperclip for like free, and then he ran again, and then broke the barrier for free. And I was like, that is a play.
Exactly.
That is good math. Nice.
I never pulled off that play. But that was the thought behind this deck.
Sure. Okay.
On the corpse side, I played Scorpios. It's a Wayland ID. I'm not super into like popular Netrunner community. I'm not on the Discord, I guess, so I haven't reached that level yet, but I follow the Reddit.
Gotcha. So you follow the Reddit. You're not on a Discord. You're not on like a Slack chat.
Exactly.
Okay. But you have read a forum.
So I feel like Scorpios is kind of hot and cold. Its ability says like once per turn when a card is trashed, you can remove it from the game. So
right.
Some people feel like that's pretty oppressive.
Well, especially because it's armed with a bunch of tools to like trash your programs,
exactly.
Right?
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
So all they're trying to do, in a sense, is to lock you out by removing all of like your barrier breaker, for example, and then just putting barriers on everything.
Right. I don't play a single Scorpios. I think at our first tournament, there was one other, maybe?
Sure.
The cool thing about both of our tournaments was that I think the IDs are actually pretty diverse.
Yeah.
Which I enjoyed. I was all prepared to like sit across from a cerebral emerging deck and just like forfeit turn three or something.
Oh my gosh.
I have no idea what they do, but they just always sounded really powerful. And I'm aware enough of the ID to know that it would be hard to play against. So I'm glad I never sat across CI.
Sure.
One of my goals I told you before was to feel more comfortable playing Corp than I did last year. So I went to one store champ last year. I basically had to borrow 85% of both of my decks from you.
Yeah.
I actually don't even remember what Corp I played.
I think I... because I like major decks,
right.
So that you could like maximize like the cards that you had in your very small collection.
Uh-huh.
So
that's probably HB something.
I think it was Builder of Nations, Wayland.
Maybe
the Advanceable Ice one. Because I remember being like, "Oh, cool, we can put in this new Ice Mausolus," and you're
that's
like,
possible.
"Yeah, here's the thing: there's no money, so you can't res the Mausolus." I was like, "Dang it, Greg, you're right."
Regardless. I felt a lot more comfortable and a lot more... I felt a lot more agency, I guess, playing the Corp deck this time.
Hmm.
It might just be because I practiced more than I did last year. So, like, this year I actually, like, played games on Jinteki. Most of them were with you or with another mutual friend of ours, right?
Right.
But I did the occasional, like, random game. I definitely didn't do any of that the year before.
Yeah, so that helped a lot, I'm sure.
But I also appreciate that... Wayland doesn't rely on a ton of hidden information,
mm-hmm.
right? Like this deck doesn't have a single asset. It has only one upgrade, right? And the rest are basically agendas. And so I don't feel comfortable playing that hidden agenda game because I feel like I can't evaluate accurately like how hard it would be for the person across from me to guess what card this is, if that
yeah.
makes sense, right?
Yeah.
If I put down a face down card and I'm MBN, I might think I'm being sneaky, right? But the person across from me probably knows, A, at like worst case scenario, it is like this specific card, right? Or if it's not, then I don't have to run this. And they can like make an informed decision based off of that. I don't know. One of our first like 10 or 15 games we played together, I was probably playing Jinteki. I had like a Project Junebug in hand. I put it down in a remote with no ice. And I was like, he's going to think this is an agenda. There's, like, no way he's going to ignore this card. And, you know, like, you literally never looked at that card for the rest of the game. And you were like, this is obviously a trap.
Like, this is obviously a trap.
And so that is why I was turned off to Jinteki and MBN.
Because you couldn't get that Project Junebug to land.
And I was apparently not being sneaky in the slightest.
Well, so a cool thing about the most recent cycle is that they're big on assets that can act as traps, but still give you a benefit if the runner doesn't check. So, mm-hmm. like, it's like a win-win. Gene
sure.
Splicer can do, like, 2 net damage, or you can over-advance it and make it a point.
Mm-hmm.
Or NGO Front is obviously really popular, and... You can get a bunch of money off of it, whether or not the runner checks it. You're just going to get that money.
I think that card was also kind of an anarch counter, or at least, the very least, kind of like an inefficient icebreaker counter, right?
Sure.
Because I would spend, like, it felt awful to spend 10 or 12 or 15 credits getting through a server that you knew was probably an NGO front, but you couldn't afford to let it be an agenda.
Right.
You would run it, and then it would be an NGO front. You would be poor.
You would be very poor.
For me, at least, just because I'm not super familiar with the entire card pool, and I haven't played, like, hundreds of games, right, with every ID, I appreciated that this deck was really just agendas, ice, operations, and one upgrade, which to me feels like relatively standard Netrunner.
Yeah.
And I know the game has, like, evolved a lot over a long time, but as someone who has still probably played fewer than 100 games, for sure, I felt a lot more comfortable doing a deck that didn't rely on a lot of that hidden information aspect.
Yeah, I think that was one of the strengths of that Scorpios deck, is it was like, you're going to try to score out real fast, and if you don't, you're going to try to trash their breakers. And so mm-hmm. then you got to practice with Scorpios a little bit and say, like, okay, these are the breakers that this Anarch is likely to have. These are the breakers that this Shaper is likely to have. Or this Shaper might have a levy as part of their plan, so I really want to make sure that I can hunt down that levy and, like, remove it from the game. So there were, like, a couple lines that you learned, I feel like, and then that was basically all you needed to know. It was like, score out real fast, don't lose, and try to hit their really important pieces. And that was all you did.
Absolutely. It's like, it was cool. Our mutual friend Ross, right, plays a lot of Shaper. And it was cool to learn that a lot of Shapers just run one of every Icebreaker, because it's super easy for them to, like, find their Icebreakers, right? They have a lot of cards that enable getting the breaker they need. And so a lot of them don't add duplicate cards just because they don't need to increase that, like, likelihood they actually draw into it. So we had one game where I trashed, it's probably Paperclip, whatever his Barrier Breaker was. And, like, that was his only Barrier Breaker he had in his whole deck. And so he literally could not win the game just because I had an ice wall down, right? He would never be able to get past it. So that was interesting to, like, play games and learn a little bit about what, like, typical-ish decks look like for each identity.
Yeah. So then talk to me a little bit more in detail about that very first tournament. Do you have any memorable moments from that? And then where did you ultimately end up?
Sure. My first matchup, I was playing Wayland, and I was playing into a Pirate Haley deck. So that's definitely, Pirate Haley is definitely not what I would call typical Netrunner.
And it was, not at
I
all.
Felt super unprepared playing into it. So I guess Pirate Haley is a deck that uses a number of, I think there are more recent cards, right?
Yeah, they're like, most of them are from the Katara cycle, that's right.
Uh-huh. Where they will break, like, all but one subroutine on a piece of ice, right? Or they'll break just the first subroutine, or just the last subroutine. And you, at face value, it seems like that's a pretty lame card. But as I started to play my deck, I realized that basically all of my ice is end the run as its last subroutine. So suddenly a card that says, like, break the last subroutine becomes really powerful.
Right.
Because most of my ice only had one subroutine period. Or, like, of its two or three subroutines, the last one is the one that said end the run.
Right.
So
Gabali breaks the last sub, Kongamato breaks the first sub, and then Grappling Hook breaks all but one subroutine. Right. So, like, your multi-sub ice usually has, like, one kind of wishy-washy subroutine, like Mausolus or Hordom. Each are, like, the corp gains one. Yeah. And so then you just break the rest of them with, you know, Grappling Hook or Gabali or whatever.
For sure. And I felt like I was doing really well, right? Because all those cards require you to trash them to use them, right?
Yeah.
So I was like, oh, cool. My deck is actually really good against this. But I think he was definitely hamstringed by me removing a lot of his cards from the game, or, like, targeting his console, or targeting his, like, legitimate Icebreaker and not just, like, the Gabali or Grappling Hook, right? Mm-hmm. I ended up not winning fast enough, I guess is probably the point. Theoretically, he would eventually just run out of breaker cards, right? And I would win, but he was able to eventually get through and pull it out.
Hmm.
His corp deck was Gagarin Deep Space Mining.
Mm.
And
spammy
I've always
spam.
Been really intimidated by asset spam, and yeah. I continued to lose to it. This is the first of multiple instances across both tournaments where I would get hard-hitting news, like turn three, and just like super struggle to come back from it. So in this specific game, he would play hard-hitting news, which is a card that gives you four tags.
Right. They can only play it as the corpse last click. So in theory, if you have enough money, you can just get rid of all the tags.
Right.
But typically, you do not have enough money, and then you are sad because you are attacked.
I was very bad at playing around this card, especially since he was Wayland, right? So I didn't realize that it's like a common include in other decks, probably.
Sure.
He literally told me after the game, whenever you're across from NBN or Wayland, you should always assume they have hard-hitting news. I was like, oh, that's probably good to know.
Yeah, or at least play like they do.
For sure.
Yeah.
So from his hard-hitting news, the next turn he played a Zealous Judge, which is like the most frustrating card of the game.
There's a lot of frustrating cards, Greg.
I think it just says, like, you can only play it if the runner is tagged, right? Or res it if the runner is tagged.
You can only res it. Yeah, it's an asset. Yep.
But it says you can spend a click to give them a tag, I think.
Click and a credit.
Mm-hmm. Click and a credit.
So they basically are tagged while Zealous Judge is, like, rezzed on the table. So you have to trash it.
I was already not rich enough to clear all the tags from hard-hitting news. Like, the next turn, I think I clicked for three credits, cleared the third tag. He rezzed Zealous Judge and just kept giving me tags. Anyway. Ugh. It was a game that like lasted 15 more turns, but I lost on turn three, I felt like, which is probably my like least favorite kind of Netrunner game to play.
Yeah, you know, I
eventually lost because he drew Consulting Visit and played Boom, right?
Yeah.
But he just didn't draw into either of those cards, and if he had drawn into those cards on turn four, I would have lost on turn four.
Right, right. And there was nothing that you were not successfully able to dig yourself out of that pit.
Right.
Once you were in it. So
I like probably like six turns later, I felt like I was back in the groove of things. But by then you're already like tempo wise three or four net turns behind the corp, it feels like, right?
Yeah.
Where they've been able to set up or draw or do whatever they wanted to do. That's rough.
Yeah, it is rough. Netrunner is definitely like a tempo game. So the exciting games of Netrunner are where the tempo goes back and forth. But sometimes you get into a really bad spot really early on and you get real tagged and then there's not so much tempo swinging as it's just you are just bleeding out your tempo. And so then it just, that game doesn't feel so great, I guess.
No. In general, I just hate losing to damage. I always feel bad.
Why?
I feel like, that's a good question. Maybe it's just because I do such a poor job of thinking around the fact that I could lose to damage, right?
Mm.
Like, I've tried to get better at making sure I always have some money. I feel like a pretty rookie mistake is being like, I have exactly enough money to play this card, so I'm going to play this card, right? Mm-hmm. But then you're so poor that you can't actually use your breakers or assets or resources or whatever you played for, like, another one or two turns, which is, again, a tempo hit. You were talking about how it's a tempo-based game. I don't know. It feels, maybe I'm just like a too much of a goody two shoes. It seems like the rule book starts with you win by getting 7 points, right?
Right.
So I feel like that should be the most common way to win. And I get a little disappointed when I lose to net damage, but it happened multiple times across these 2 days or lose to damage in general. So
right.
I should probably
right.
start trying to play around that a little better or just include damage based tech and decks I make in the future.
Right. That's the other workaround, is that, like, man, I cannot figure out, like, I cannot personally, like, figure out how to beat, like, a potential unleashed, grind the runner out kind of deck. Like, sure. I'm just very bad at it because I install all my shit still, and then I lose because I installed all my cards instead of kept them to be health. And so, like, I'll try to be better about it. And most of the time, it still doesn't work out. And so it's like, fine, you know what? I'm putting in Caldera. I'm putting in Film Critic. And gosh darn it, I'm not going to lose to damage.
Exactly.
It's the beauty of being able to personalize your own decks and put in whichever tech cards you want. Yeah, so any other memorable games or experiences from that first tournament?
So I told you before the tournament, on the episode when we talked about like what decks I would bring, that my goal was to A, actually win a game with a Corp this time, because that didn't happen last year.
Right.
Last year, I think I won twice with my Gabe deck and zero times with my Corp.
Yeah.
So I did do that. I eventually pulled out a win. I forget what the first one was against. It was at the bottom table. So we were both like, hey, I'm pretty new. And the other guy was like, I haven't played in 3 years. And so that was enjoyable. I think we split. My stretch goal was sweeping. I didn't sweep that day. But my Corp did end up winning twice, I think. The other time was against that like kind of jank deck where they have like three origamis and get a hand size of like 20 and then play some other card. I don't remember the exact combo he was going for, but he didn't draw into it fast enough and I won. So
gotcha. Yeah, yeah. There's a Kabunisa Wu deck. Kabunisa Wu is like the ID and she lets you search for programs, but you have to remove them from the game at the end of the turn, so she searches for a self-modifying code and then uses the self-modifying code to pull out other stuff. And in this case, it's three origami programs, which increase your hand size by a bunch. And then there's a shaper card called Game Day that says draw cards till you fill up your hand size, so you like draw like half your deck. And then you do something else from there? Yeah, so I don't know if there is a best way to play that deck, but I think one of the first popular versions that came out that did well was just like a combo deck that was like, cool, well, now I have all these weird pieces in my hand, so I guess I'm just going to do all this. But I don't know. That's not my style of deck, so I like didn't really pay close attention.
Sure. That's fair. It's probably not many people's style of deck.
It's just, it's weird, but it's interesting, maybe. If there were like a bunch of like weird shaper cards that all work together really interestingly, then that would be a great shell to put it in, right? Because you're like, cool, I'm gonna drop all my cards and then I'm gonna use my Whodangle program to pop up the virtual resource that's gonna let me zip zap my way to the servers. But I don't know what those are. So
yeah. Val, on the other hand, didn't do as well. I think I won one game, if I remember correctly. But in general, this would end up becoming a recurring theme, I feel like. But I always felt like it felt bad to make runs after I had all of my breakers down, just because I was using Paperclip and Black Orchestra and MK Ultra. And Black Orchestra and MK Ultra especially are pretty inefficient, it seems like.
Yeah, they're not great.
I know, like, Paperclip is supposed to be hyper-efficient, which is great.
Yeah.
It just felt bad for me to spend, like, 15 credits on a run getting through someone who put down, like, a Fairchild or some ridiculously big piece of ice plus one other ice and then end up seeing an asset that I no longer had the money to trash, right?
Right.
So that, right. I feel like that was relatively or seeing an NGO front, which was also awful.
Yeah. Black Orchestra is the real killer there because there's so many, like, three sub code gates.
Right.
And you can only break two at a time with Black Orchestra. So then, I mean, again, if you're hitting, like, the Mausolus thing, you're like, okay, you paid four to res that, and I'm going to pay six to break, and you still get a credit.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's stupid, you know? Now, again, with Mausolus or some of these other pieces of ice, you can sometimes, like, lower the strength.
Mm-hmm.
With like a data sucker token or something, and then you can like get around it, but it's rarely good. Like there are very few pieces of ice that Black Orchestra is like, yes, this is efficient. So,
yeah. So I felt weird playing Val. Maybe that just means I didn't play Val correctly either, which is possible. I feel like I had trouble landing mining accidents. Because it seemed like, in general, Corps were doing relatively okay with money. And so a lot of the times, the Corps just paid the 5 credits. Or I wouldn't play mining accident because they already had like 11 credits and they probably would have paid 5 anyway, right? So then I would have spent two to make them spend five, which isn't awful, but they were probably already had more money than me to begin with if I was considering playing that card, right?
Right.
So I don't know that I ever gave someone more than like two bad publicity. Or if they were like happy to take the bad publicity, it probably means they were confident that they would win soon enough that having three bad pub wouldn't matter, right?
Right.
So I don't know. I had some games where I had trouble drawing into my econ. I don't know if it seems like a standard econ suite with Dirty Laundry and Sure Gamble and Daily Cast plus one other econ card. I don't know if other decks have more econ than that. The other
Yeah.
piece of the deck that didn't really work was this like indexing and mad dash combo. I felt like my breakers were so inefficient that there was never a time where I could spend the money to indexing and then spend all that money a second time to mad dash, right?
Right.
And so I think if I were to go through this again, I would maybe try and come up with a different Hail Mary super impactful run combo than the indexing mad dash if I'm
Yeah.
bringing Black Orchestra and MK Ultra with me.
If you get up the bad pub, then each of those indexing and mad dash runs is cheaper. So like that's good.
For sure.
But I don't know. I think things go in and out of favor. For whatever reason, indexing has become less common in favor of something like deep data mining that lets you see like five cards all at once. I've seen max decks that use those. Like, there's a control max build that went around this winter, and it used a deep data mining. And then, the other flavor of the month is like a Val or an Anarch that uses Find the Truth, which lets you see the top card of R&D when you make a successful run. And then they combine that with RNG Key, which is a program that. When you access a card out of R&D or HQ, you like before you look at it, you try to predict the cost. And if you're correct, if you're like three, and the card flips over and it's like a three cost piece of ice or something, then you get like three credits or two cards to draw or whatever. So if you know what the card is from Find the Truth, then you're guaranteed to get that. But that's these are effects that trigger every turn, so you want to be running every single turn to get the most out of those, which seems like it's the opposite of like the one big Hail Mary deep data mining, So I don't know.
I also haven't played enough, I think, to have a good idea of what games were like I lost mostly because of luck, right? Or I lost mostly because I made a bunch of bad choices. And I'm sure that both of those things happened that day, but I have trouble distinguishing like which games I lost just because I made an indexing run and didn't see a single agenda, right? Which doesn't feel great. Because then you just see the next five cards, and since none of them are agendas, they're probably like this awful ice or awful asset you didn't want to see to begin with. And so you'd like try to rearrange them in the least damaging order, but you'll see them in three turns anyway.
Exactly.
I don't know. I felt better playing Corp that day than I did playing Runner, I guess is what it ended up being, which is cool. I wanted to get better at Corp,
But the hope was
but
to also remain
also
good
like
at
still
run.
enjoy playing Runner.
A future idea, if you wanted to keep playing maybe that kind of Anarch rig, would be to include a couple copies of Cutlery, which are the run events that trash a specific type of ice. So like Spooned, for example, will trash a code gate. So that way you can get rid of all the ice that you hate and then make your indexing runs cheaper.
So my deck had a single copy of Knifed, but I think this is probably a card I should have taken out because I was always worried, like, what if there's a barrier card I've never heard of before that's way more awful than this card I was about to knife? And I think I maybe played it once out of the like 16, 14, 16 games across both tournaments, just because I was really worried that like I would play Knifed and then regret it later because they would res some ridiculous barrier that I wasn't aware or should have played around or knew to save it for, right? It's kind of like that problem you have in RPGs where you never use any of your special items because you're
Yeah.
always like, there's going to be an emergency eventually. And then you get to an emergency and you're always like, no, I'm sure there will be like a worse scenario than this.
Yeah,
And
yeah.
then you finish the game with like all of your revives and you've never spent a single one.
And you're like, man, I've been playing this on hard mode. I could have been using this stuff. Come on, man.
Exactly.
So that's a deck list that we pulled from Worlds that we based your Val deck on. And the Worlds meta had that grindy Jinteki deck, the meat grinder, where you just try to mill the runner out. And one of the reasons why that deck is even feasible is because of the piece of ice Kakugo, which is a barrier that does a net damage when the runner passes it. And it's really devastating if they get one of those on R&D and you're like, cool, if I ever want to like index a mad dash, I'm going to take 2 net damage. And if it's in potential unleash, then I'm going to lose 2 cards off the top of my stack as well.
And you
Like,
might
that's
lose your mad
terrible.
dash, right?
So, I bet you that Knifed was in there specifically for like a Kakugo thing. But like, how many Jinteki decks with Kakugo did you end up playing against in these tournaments?
None.
Yeah. So probably in hindsight, maybe we could have changed that for like a spoon or something. So, Greg, what would you say is like your worst game from that day?
So I was sitting across from Jinteki for the first time that day. I don't even remember what his ID was. Turn two, I like had Film Critic in my hand, and I was like, I might as well make a run once, and then if I don't get anything, I can put Film Critic down and like start setting up the things I want to set up.
Sure.
So I tried running his hand. I accessed that agenda that does net damage. I forget what it's called. I stole an agenda, I guess. I think it was Avocado Protocol. Next turn, he like consulting visited for a punitive counterstrike, and I died. Like turn three. And I felt super bad because A, as I've explained before, I hate losing to damage because it seems like not the way you were meant to play the game. And B, I suddenly had like 45 minutes to walk around this comic book store in Kalamazoo because I had lost
It's like the worst kind
that
of free time.
quickly.
It's like shame free time.
That was my worst game.
A
It all would have
2-minute
been
walk of
different if I
shame
had
around the
like,
store.
instead of just being like, it's safe to run click one. What's the worst that can happen? Turns out against Jinteki, you should play the Film Critic you have in your hand, click one, to avoid the worst that could happen.
Right. Because in
And
against Jinteki, it's not like what's the worst that's going to happen to me from hitting this ice or running his hand. It's what is the most important card in my hand that I could lose if I ran into something I didn't want to. Life lesson.
I mean, I even had like I've had worse, right? So I like hit, I stole Avocado, I took 4 damage, I played I've had worse, I ended up with like 4 cards in my hand at the end of the turn, and I was like, oh, I'm in a great spot. So the next turn he like punitive counterstriked, and then what's the card where you can play an operation from archives?
He probably did archive memory second click to pick
There
it
you
back
go.
up again.
So that's what happened. So he punitive counterstrike, archive memories, punitive counterstrike, and I died. That was super unfulfilling and over very quickly.
What she said, but not to me. But not to me. That was someone else.
Absolutely, I believe you.
So then after that, did you make any changes to your deck getting ready for the next store championship?
I tried playing that kind of control max deck you mentioned a few times. Partially because I listened to another one of your episodes where you were talking to
Probably Andrew.
Andrew.
Shout out to
Got
Andrew
his name
Schneider, what
right.
up?
And he was talking about his max deck, and it sounded really cool. So I found his deck list and tried playing it, and it looked really cool. I probably only won like one out of every 3 games,
It
maybe.
seems very skill intensive to me, and I'm super intimidated by it.
I was still super tempted to play it just because I didn't feel great in my Val games. For what we talked about before, right? Like it didn't always feel great to make runs, and I felt like inefficient a lot of the time.
Yeah.
At the very end, I decided to stick with my original Valduk just because I had more experience playing it.
Yeah, and, which I think is correct, by the way.
Right.
Typically, like, if you are way more comfortable with a deck than something else, you don't switch off that deck. Because right. what's going to kill you is you'll go to the new deck and you'll be like, yeah, I got the confidence because the new deck's got the power. And then you run into a bunch of stuff that you're like, I forgot how this matchup works. And then you die and you lose and you hate everything. So,
right.
Kudos to you for not doing that.
Thank you. My Wayland changes. I actually changed my Wayland deck, which was, again, the one I felt better about.
Mm-hmm.
And it was only a couple small changes. So my original deck had Graft, which is an agenda that lets you draw any three cards when you score it.
Yeah, like search your deck for those cards, right?
Right. Mm-hmm. So I don't think I played it at all the first tournament. B, I wasn't confident in the fact that you have to reveal those three cards, right, to the runner when you draw them. So I think your ideal scenario is like you reveal a Audacity and two other random cards, and you happen to have a Project Atlas in your hand, right?
Right.
And then you score it out next turn. I decided to switch it out for that new SSL endorsement card.
Yeah, which is the 5/3 that, like, when it's scored or even when it's stolen, you get 9 credits over the next 3 turns.
Mm-hmm. I added another standoff because I really liked it as an economy card. It's a 0-point agenda, which A is great because it makes it agenda fodder for cards that say you have to or you can forfeit an agenda to play this.
Yeah, so like
this deck was Archer or Tithonium.
Tithonium, nice.
And also, people never take the like optional action, right? It says, like, when you score this, the runner can, or you go back and forth trashing a card off of your table, basically, right?
Right. So the runner can trash one of their own cards, then you can trash one of your own cards.
It's supposed to be like a game of chicken, but the runner would basically never trash one of their cards, so I would almost always get 5 credits and draw a card.
Nice.
So it was basically another, like, hedge fund, essentially, that took longer to play.
Mm-hmm.
And then because I had added another standoff, I originally only had 1 Archer and 1 Tithonium. And so because I had 3 standoffs now, I added another Archer and another Tithonium.
Hmm.
And I ended up taking out 2 of my like really cheap ice. I mean, the deck is like cheap ice heavy, right? Because it's supposed to score quickly.
Right.
But I went from like 3 ice walls to 2 and 3 roto turrets to 2, I think, in order to make room for those slightly larger ice. Felt like I wasn't consistently winning fast enough, like, every time.
You mentioned that, like, those Rota turrets felt really bad to res, because they're 4 to res each, and it doesn't really tax anything out. And if they don't have programs, it doesn't do anything. And if they have a Sentry Breaker, it doesn't do anything. And
right. Yeah, I don't know. I would much rather spend the money on, like, a Trojan Horse or a Hunter Seeker than res a Rota turret, probably.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Did you ever play that Trojan Horse, by the way?
Once, maybe. I included it as, like, my, like, spicy in the way that, like, I appreciate spicy. I order mild buffalo wings.
Spicy.
This was my, like, mild buffalo wing card. It was including a single copy of Trojan Horse.
So spicy. which
is a newer it's card like a
it's like an operation.
Race. Yeah.
Trace them.
If you win the trace, you can trash a card worth up to the amount you won the trace by. I think it's like trace 3 or trace 4, maybe. I'd have to double check. But if you're ahead in money, which I felt like Gorps often were this season.
Yeah.
Actually not awful, right? Because especially in Scorpios, it actually becomes just like a cheaper Hunter Seeker. So they don't have to spend the extra click to play it.
And they only have to like access a card or something. They don't even have to steal an agenda like Hunter Seeker.
Right. Mm-hmm. I think it's make a successful run, right? Or something like that.
Yeah.
It's not as a restrictive like requirement to play. I was glad I had it. I think I used it at least once against someone. And it was also good because it's a newer card. So like when I was playing against you, for example, I knew it was the card you drew from R&D because you had to read what it did. And so if like people
we got
were
a
ever
reader.
Like
we got a reader over here. Okay.
If people this were ever like
the card, it's a
exactly.
new card. Just came out.
So if and it happened at least two other times where like someone would access it off R&D or they would access it out of HQ and they would like look at it for 30 seconds as opposed to like 5 seconds.
Right.
It would be like, what in the world does this card do? So I think that was like a meta call that I was.
Yeah.
I'm going to call it a meta call and say I'm happy that I included it in my deck.
It's a tech card against
an
everyone.
Experienced Netrunner players.
Cool. So then moving on, 2 weeks later, we went up to Grand Rapids. And hung out with my dudes at the old stomping grounds, out of the box, Kentwood. And we had a huge store championship of six people.
I should preface this segment by saying that at the previous store championship, there were 12 people. And I got 10th.
Top 10, baby.
Top 10. You have high quality guests on your show. The pinnacle of Netrunner aptitude.
That's right. Greg is a 2-time top 10 store championship competitor.
Maybe 3-time, depending on how the segment ends.
I can't wait. Go ahead. Tell me all about it. You made these changes. We went to the place. We played the games. What happened?
So, since there were only 6 people, again, spoiler alert, I do end up top 10 for the 3rd time.
Whoa, top 10! 3-time top 10!
What I personally really enjoyed about this tournament was this was the 3rd tournament I went to where you and Ross were also there, but I had never played you or Ross at the tournament. And I actually got to play both of you this time because
yeah.
there were only 6 people. So it was fun to play against friends in a slightly more serious environment. Not that I think you like let me win, but it was still interesting to play in like an environment where like tracking records and
Yeah. Something more special. To it,
right.
You know? You also got to play on stream. Hey,
I did. I think like 13 people were watching when I played.
Dude, you're basically famous.
It was the game I got swept, so
Ooh.
Probably the other guy is famous.
Yeah.
yeah. My feelings the second time were really similar to the first, which I think makes sense because I obviously didn't change my Runner deck at all, and I only changed my Wayland deck a little bit. I had to play a game against the new Asmari EdTech ID.
Yeah.
And I feel like since I haven't played enough Netrunner, I'm not super great at adapting to things I haven't played against before. Maybe that's true for everyone, right? But I have definitely never played a game against Asmari EdTech.
Yeah, well, it had only come out like 2 weeks before. Mm-hmm. And I think the weekend of the store championship was like the week after Canadian Nationals, and Asmari won the Canadian Nationals. Now, I did not do my homework that week, and I did not find that deck before it became like deck list of the week or whatever, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's called Wishbone, and so the only Asmari decks that I had seen online before this tournament were like Asmari punitive decks, because it's just an econ ID, and you make money, and then you play the punitives to do the traces and you kill the dudes, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, like, when I was playing against Asmari, I was playing against it thinking, like, okay, if I steal something, I gotta make sure that I have money up and I gotta, you know, like, play this really careful game. And then they were just like, nah, dude, I'm gonna tag you because it's NBN and I'm gonna tag you. And I was like, well, damn it. I did not do this right.
Uh-huh.
But anyway, I do want to say that at this tournament, there were 6 people. There were, what, like 2 Scorpios,
mm-hmm.
1, no, it was Argus. There was 1 Argus, 2 Scorpios, 3 Geists, 2 Asmari EdTechs, and then whatever Ross brought. So,
right. Architect
was like,
of Tomorrow and Kabanisa Wu.
Right. Whatever he plays. No. But it was surprising at how, like how homogenous the meta was.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, I still knew, like, very little about how to play against those decks. I brought Geist, and I still did not know how to play against Geist. It was just very bad. Anyway.
I was super cocky into Geist, right? Because when you compare their IDs, right?
Yeah.
So Geist is an ability who revolves around playing cards from archives, basically, right? Or from your heap, rather. In Scorpio, or when you trash cards, right? Something related to the heap.
Something you trash and then you get the your monies and the cards and the... Yeah, it's whenever you use a trash can symbol. Whenever you trash...
Right. You get ability. A credit?
You get a card.
Card.
But that's then he has the three tech traders that give you credit every time you do it, too.
So, he's trashing a lot, is my conclusion.
And he trashes all his stuff. So you remove it all
from the game. Scorpios gets to remove it all from the game. Which definitely is not a bad thing. I don't think it's as hard of a counter as if I was playing sitting across the table from Max, maybe.
You talked about that when we were looking at Scorpios. You were like, does this work against Max's ability? And I was like, yeah. And you're like, that seems like it's really bad for Max then. And I was like, yes, it is.
And unfortunately, I never played a Max, I think.
No.
It should be good into Geist to some degree, just because he does use a lot of trash-related abilities, right?
Right.
I think I wasn't ready for this day more than the other. Maybe this just means I'm getting cockier, but I felt like I lost more games due to luck than to like bad choices than I did at the first tournament. So maybe that's just me like feeling really good about playing this Scorpios deck and still losing and trying to like justify still losing, which is possible.
You know, it's also saying that like I did not make the same level of like blatant mistakes that I did the first time around. So you're improving. Getting better, man.
I like to think so. I feel like in my game against Geist, I just didn't draw agendas fast enough. So even though I was removing cards of his from the game that he probably wanted, I just didn't score enough points. I probably slowed him down. I didn't like stop him, right? He was eventually able to get what he needed, get set up and deal what he needed.
Right, and he also has control over when he's going to run, so the good Geist player is then going to not to just run all the time on single ice servers so that every turn they're trashing one thing that you can remove from the game, and instead they're going to make a big impactful run and then trash like four things in one turn, and you can still only remove one of those. So, you know, they can play around your ability a little bit.
Sure. I got to play Ross, and I got to play you.
Yeah!
Which again, like I mentioned before, I was excited about. At both of our matches, we went 1-1, I think.
I think we went splitskies.
I think we both won on the corpse side.
Let's see, at this tournament, I brought my Titan Redux, and then I brought... I brought Geist.
Oh, Geist, right, yeah. Our game, I removed like the last copy of one of your breakers, and you just couldn't win, I think.
Yeah, I forget what happened, but I do know that I have not really played Geist before, and one of the guys at the tournament plays a ton of Geist. I think Zach, who eventually won, he and I were talking about it afterwards, and he's like, I've been playing a lot of Geist, I've played a lot of Geist since he came out, and my analysis of him is that he has a really high skill ceiling, so... You know, if you're a good Geist player, you can do a whole lot with that. But there's also a really high skill floor, meaning that in order to basically do well with him, in order to be able to pilot him successfully, you have to know what you're doing. You have to have a good amount of Geist skill. So me just picking up the deck and bringing it to the tournament is kind of a mistake, but... I went to a bunch of Stort Champs this year, and at the start of the season, I was like, I want to bring every faction to a Stort Champ. And we got to this one, and I was like, it's the last one I'm going to go to, and I still haven't played Criminal. So I can either play Aesop Steve or Connections Ian, which is not good. but it's a deck I was playing in, like, December, and I sometimes won sometimes. Or I can play Geist. And I said, you know what? Kongamato and Gabali seem neat, so I'll play Geist. But I'm not very good at Geist, because I've never played him before. And so then you and I sat down, and you were like, Graham, I've already played this matchup today, and I'm really good at it. And I was like, you know what, Greg, you're right. And I just died, and I lost.
Right. I had already lost to Zach that day, playing Geist.
Right. Zach, and clearly the better Geist player.
So, I had already learned how to beat you, I guess. You were just unlucky timing. If we had played first, you might have won.
That's right. I could have preyed upon your noobness. But then we switched sides. And I was on Titan. I had brought Titan to, like, the second store champ of the season I went to. But that Titan deck, I wanted to lean on the rush side of things. Basically, I was trying to do what your Scorpios deck was doing, right? Which is, mm-hmm. like, make money early, score out behind hard end the runs, and then when they steal agendas, you can punish them in Scorpios by playing Hunter Seeker.
Right.
And I was like, you know, Hunter Seeker, I've seen in some other rush decks out of, like, Next Design or Asa Group or Palana or these other random IDs. I should try that in Titan and just lean really hard into the rush strategy. So I did. Here's the thing. Titan isn't Scorpios. So when you trash a program, they can still get it back. And I was like, no. That's dumb. I don't like that. So then I put in an Arc Lockdown in my early testing of that deck to remove programs from the game. And it was really good. Arc Lockdown is bae, in my opinion. Personal opinion, Arc Lockdown is great. So it worked out really well, having the one Arc Lockdown in this early Titan deck. And I was like, what if I put in two Arc Lockdown? And it was also really good. And so I said, you know what? I'm going to put in three. Three Arc Lockdown. It's crazy. It's crazy. Am I too crazy? I don't know. So this first store championship, I bring this version of this Titan deck that is like a whole bunch of End the Run Ice and then three Hunter Seeker and three Arc Lockdown and then like a Best Defense and a Cyberdex Virus Suite. So like the idea is that anything that's going to stop me from scoring out Atlas, I'm going to remove it from the game. But it doesn't work because if you score out your Atlas early, then they like just get set up. Okay, it's cool. No, it's fine. I'm at 4 points. Everything's super good. I just need to trash all your things. And they're like, okay, cool. I will legwork your hand. And then they steal like 4 points. And you're like, dang. So basically, it still fell to the same thing that Rush falls to all the time, which is like a setup runner that's set up fast.
The interesting thing about Arc Lockdown, though, is so it's a card that just says if you name a card, right, and you remove all copies of the card in the heap from the game.
That's right.
So, like, Scorpios is cool that, like, you can remove a card from the game almost every turn, but there's often only a few actually impactful cards that you need to remove from the game, right? So if you can put three Arc Lockdown in your deck, you might as well not play Scorpios because you essentially have Scorpios' ability for the three impactful cards you want to remove from the game.
And that's what I was thinking, because the Titan ability lets you get those free Atlas counters, which are pretty godly. So, yeah, but anyway, it lost most of its games, and it wasn't very good, and it was, I didn't have enough ice, so I wasn't scoring out fast enough, and I wasn't using the popular Reconstruction Contract plus a Dedication Ceremony 2-card fast advance combo thing, which seems like it'd be terrible, but ultimately is, like, really good, I think, because it brings you up to, like, a critical mass of fast advance tools. So, anyway, when it came back around to this last tournament, I had already played all the different Corp factions, and I was like, I think I want to go back to Titan, because when Titan works, it's super fun. So I took out the Arc Lockdowns, and then put in a bunch of better ice, and I put in a bunch of Trick of Lights, and then cards that put advancement counters on ice, like Priority Construction, Dedication Ceremony, and then I could use the Trick of Light to help fast advance the Atlases. And then I had two influence left over, so I put an Arc Lockdown back in there just to be safe. So, Greg, I'm trying to remember what happened in our Val matchup here.
So I was pretty poor, so I had an Inject in hand, and so I came to the incorrect decision that it was worth the risk to play Inject to try and get some money. maybe? So ideally, I would like draw into econ.
I see.
And maybe get one or two credits off of it.
Cool.
And I ended up discarding my black orchestra on like click two, I think.
Hmm.
And so I spent clicks three and four trying to run, hoping you would res a code gate so that I could play the black orchestra.
And I said, nah.
I originally made that decision was because I assumed you would just res the ice. But like as soon as I made the first run and you didn't res anything, I realized that to you, it was far more worth it to possibly lose like 2 points, maybe even, right? And then next turn be able to arc lock down my single black orchestra than it would be to like res a code gate right now, right?
And yep.
Prevent me from doing that, which I wish I had realized before I played Inject. So I ran like two or three times. I don't remember if I played Inject like one or two. I ran at least twice. You didn't res any code gates. So then unfortunately sits Black Orchestra in my heap. And next turn you arc lock down it out of the game. And yeah. Then I couldn't break a single code gate anymore. Because my only AI breaker was Amakua. And by then, I don't even know if I had it on the board. But even if I did, it was probably only at like one strength. And so worst case scenario, you just purge virus counters and then I can't get through code gates again for five turns.
Right.
So,
gotta charge that is, Amakua again.
That is when I lost. I was able to make like some Hail Mary indexing and then second run at some point. I think I ended up at 4 or 5 points, but I definitely wasn't in a place to win the game.
Yeah, yeah. So I don't really like Whoredom as a piece of ice in general because of how well Black Orchestra breaks Whoredom. But Whoredom has the thing where like you can advance it three times and then AI breakers can't break it anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's really good in a deck like this where I would consistently like see Black Orchestras in the bin and be like, cool, I'm going to remove those from the game. And then I'm going to triple advance my Whoredoms, and now you can't get past them. So, like, right. The flexibility it offers, I think, is decent.
Mm-hmm.
So we went Splitskies. That game against you was the only game that I won that day. and I was 6th out of 6. So, top 10, baby! Top 10!
So I ended up 4th out of 6, which meant I got a playmat.
Hey-o.
It doesn't feel like the most honorable way to win a playmat, but I won a playmat.
You did. You did it.
And I did it by beating the two friends I went to the tournament with.
But you know what? We're still friends.
We're still friends. That's why we're on this podcast.
And you know what now? I hate you, Greg. You're the worst. And I'm kicking you off.
Bringing back up these bad memories.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So what did you learn or get out of this whole process of like focused play to get ready for store championships?
Netrunner has a huge just like knowledge requirement so that like even if you like conceptually have a great understanding of the game and even if you conceptually have a great understanding of like typical strategies, there are just so many cards that do things you might not expect that it's hard to play perfectly if you aren't aware of like all the possible things a card could be would put on the table, right? Or if it's in their deck.
Right.
I practiced a lot more this year than I did last year, and I felt more prepared going into tournaments because of that. So like I never played against Pirate Haley, and that deck I tried my best, still demolished me, and I thought it was really cool because it was super unique.
Yeah.
I thought I was like more aware of how to play against Kabanisa Wu and how to play against like Jinja City Grid because there were newer cards and I thought more people might be playing them. I was disappointed that I felt more prepared and still ended up effectively doing as well as I did a year ago. A year ago, I got, I think, like 10th out of 12, maybe something like that, or 11th out of 12. And I felt like I got a better idea of what I enjoy playing and don't enjoy playing as much. So I'm looking forward to Store Champs next year to probably take a Wayland deck again, because that was the first time I felt like I enjoyed playing Corp, and I definitely hadn't really enjoyed it before then.
Sure.
I appreciate the fact that I don't have to rely on a ton of hidden information to beat my opponent. I will almost definitely take a different runner and probably not take Anarch.
Yeah.
Again, I think I appreciate what I consider to be like core Netrunner. Like what's in the first page of the rulebook, right? Like you win by scoring 7 points. And I think Anarch is inefficient at making runs and stealing agendas in the way that I, at least I would want to play a game, I guess, right?
Sure.
I played that Gabe deck a year ago, but Gabe's rotated out now, I think, right?
Or all the crap that was in that deck rotated out.
Right.
Because it had like a Cat Siphon and Aaron Marone and right. all this stuff. Yeah.
I will probably play Shaper next year and see if I enjoy it more and feel like it's not as bad to make a run. I had a lot of fun, I guess, is probably the most important thing I learned. I'm excited to do it again next year.
Greg, I think I told you this before, but like the exact opposite of like the Black Orchestra style of breaking crap is like smoke and doing like a stealth rig. How do you feel about the idea of maybe putting in like one or two setup pieces, like support pieces for your breaker suite, but then being able to break everything for basically free?
It sounds great.
I think maybe that's the next thing to try.
Maybe that's the next thing to try.
In the most competitive metas right now, I don't think Smoke is like the top tier, but I still think she's real good. And I think she can do a lot of damage.
Why do you think she's not top tier? Just because she requires too much setup?
I think because she doesn't have a lot of like liquid cash. Mm-hmm. Like her breaking is really efficient, but she's got this really lean 40 card deck. And, you know, a good 25% of that is dedicated just to her breaking rig. And so she just doesn't have that much liquid money, which mm-hmm. means that she's weak to basically traces and tags.
Mm-hmm. And economic warfare.
And stuff like economic warfare or Brian Stinson, you know, those cards that make the most of the runner being poor. She's kind of vulnerable to hard-hitting news because she relies on resources and is also poor, so she can get buried in tags. Although, you know, she has like stuff like misdirection or whatever to counter it. But that said, like, she can do a lot of really good stuff with just her basic shell. And if you're going into a meta and you're like, I'm really worried about my Jinteki matchup, like, you can bring a feedback filter and maybe put in like data folding or something to give you like this slow drip of endless money that you can use to then pay to avoid net damage. And so you like change out like just 3 to 5 cards in that deck and suit it to your needs. So I think she's good. I don't know.
Cool.
I haven't played a ton of her, but Ross has, and sure. he always tries to get to make her work. What do you think? Do you think you could intimidate your opponents by using your smoke mat and bringing stuff in your smoke deck box and being like, I'm on smoke?
The synergy is astounding.
The synergy is real between the mat and the box.
It would be like, I'm Moses, I'm parting the Red Sea, and the Pharaoh stands on the other side.
Yeah.
It's just that kind of setup.
You just get in their head right off the bat.
Exactly.
What do you think? Would you do you really like Scorpios? Did you want to try something different?
I super enjoyed Scorpios. So I guess I don't think I would be good at acid spam, because I think I'm bad at evaluating scenarios where A, the runner like won't run this face down card.
Yeah.
Or B, this face down card isn't important enough for them to trash even if they access it, right?
Right.
I think they're powerful. I've lost literally every game I've played against an acid spam deck. Last 2 years, right?
Yeah.
So that would be something to get better at. I enjoyed that I didn't have to rely on a ton of hidden information. I mean, like, obviously, right, they don't know what cards are in your hand, and but like when you're playing against Scorpios, the card with advancement tokens is probably an agenda, right? Maybe it's NGO front now, I guess, but
sure,
most of the time it's probably an agenda. One of my agendas had to be played face up, right? You can't get more like, this is obviously an agenda than that.
I'm showing you. This is an agenda. Look at it right here. Hey, hey, you over there. Hey, look at this agenda I have. Hey, guys, look. I'm advancing. It's an Oaktown. I'm advancing in Oaktown right now.
And I would still score, like, one Oaktown a game, right? So, like, that felt good to me. And I felt more agency in that side that I could, like, more clearly identify when the runner could get in and not. So I guess, A, I'd be interested in playing more decks that are, like, asset light. And B, I'd be interested in trying more rush-oriented decks. Because something I've definitely still want to work on is... I always feel really defeated as soon as the runner has all three icebreakers on the board, right?
Hmm.
Like, I feel like, well, like there's nothing I can do to stop them. Like, the game is over, right?
I think my life is over. They installed... They're barrier breaker, and I'm done. I'm done. They've got
exactly,
them all.
Exactly, right? Like, I can't put down a piece of ice now that they can't break. And that's a feeling I don't like. Now, to be fair, obviously, they have to spend money to do those things. And maybe that just means I haven't played many decks that have, like, high-strength ice or, like, high-cost ice.
Yeah, so, I mean, like, the opposite kind of, a bad of that problem. Would be, like, Ross's Architects of Tomorrow deck, where, like, literally every piece of ice has two or three subs, and it's all, like, 4 to 6 strength, and everything is just terrible all the time.
So I'd actually be kind of interested in Ross's deck, too, I guess, just to see, like, play ice that still feels intimidating.
Right.
So, like, the thing I struggle with in these rush or faster decks is if I don't win fast enough, right, I just feel like all of my ice is so bad that once they have three breakers down, they can run like every other turn probably on whatever card I put in my remote, unless I manage to draw into like two archers and two Tithoniums and put them all in the same place.
there'd be a lot of Treasure Program subs, my friend. So then the way to score once the runner's got all their programs down is through defensive upgrades, which is, like, it literally took me, like, a year and a half of playing this game to be like, oh, I get it now. Because I would always play rushy-style decks, and then I'd be, like, trying to score out behind a freaking Enigma and an Ice Wall, and I couldn't do it, and I was like, I don't get it. But, yeah, if you put, like, a Toll Booth and an Ash in the same server... like, all of a sudden, that becomes really hard to steal stuff out of. And more often than not, like, if I get a good defensive upgrade like Ash in a remote that has a good taxing piece of ice to get through, like a Toll Booth or Fairchild 3 or even, like, a Hadrian's Wall if I'm playing, like, a Corset game, like, I will lose that game out of Centrals because the runner, like, the runner's chances of getting into that remote are, like, really, really slim. So it's possible, but you just got to have good upgrades.
Mm-hmm. My only upgrade in this deck was Marcus Batty.
Oh, and he's pretty
you're
good.
You're well aware that I have only won maybe 5% of the side games I played in my entire Netrunner career. So it was maybe a poor upgrade to include in the deck. It worked once against Ross when it counted. I won that game.
Yeah.
Batty. But I probably only used Marcus Batty successfully one other time, maybe, across the 12 games from R2 store champs.
Oh my god.
I'm not good at side games. Maybe that means I need to research more how to do it. I don't know. I always think I'm in their head, and I'm not.
I always think I'm in their head, man. It's because you didn't bring all the smoke stuff. Like, if you're on the smoke synergy, you had all these smoke cards.
They're going to be frazzled, and they're going to play zero credits every time.
Right, and you'll be like, sweet. I know what you're betting, so I basically won.
There you go. I'm excited about the smoke deck now. You've convinced me, Graham.
Just because I said the word smoke a whole lot? Now, Greg, have you considered smoke? Oh, my God. It sounds amazing.
I haven't. Is that deck list of the week?
smoke? It is. Wow. Oh, man. Well, secretly, Greg, I'm going to try to convince you to come to a regional with me.
What?
Yeah, you don't know it yet, but I'm going to try to convince you to do it.
I didn't know that coming onto this podcast.
Nope. Surprise. You should come.
Maybe regionals is the time to switch it up, obviously, because I was so successful with my previous decks. It's who would want to continue that success?
Yeah, that's right. And that way it's an excuse for you to actually like keep playing online with me and Ross.
There you go.
Because up to this point, it's been like store champ season and then off season for you. You're like, I don't got to play no more. It's another 8 months until store champ starts up again.
Exactly. To me, Netrunner has a 10-month off season.
and then you can just spend the rest of your time, you know, keeping up with League of Legends. But no there longer. No longer. You gotta stay in the Netrunner game.
Okay.
For all of the newbies out there who maybe haven't competed as much, do you have any pearls of wisdom that you want to share?
Kind of related to what I said before, right? Like, Netrunner has a huge number of cards, and unless you are super dedicated going into a tournament, you will probably not be aware of everything that can happen to you. And I think your like attitude stepping into that comic book store wherever you're playing is really important, right? Like, you're gonna have to play 6, 7, 8 hours of Netrunner that day, right? And so ideally you enjoy the game enough to sit there and play that many hours of Netrunner. If I had had that like turn 3 die to damage game for my first game, that would have sucked, but I was fully aware that I was probably going to lose turn 3 to a net damage card at some point that day, right?
Yeah. He came in with the attitude of like,
I have identified that as a personal weakness. And that's okay, right? Again, like 70% of my like Wayland deck was borrowed from you and Ross, and like 45% of my Val deck was borrowed from you and Ross. So like, it is okay to borrow cards from friends. Everyone was really friendly. They like let you take the time to like look at a card or ask what it does or double check like what an interaction would be. I think in general it's a good community. The game is old, right? So the people that still play it, I think, still really want other people to play it.
Yeah.
They're happy to help you, and they're happy to talk to you and answer questions. And I so far have placed 2 spots from the bottom, I think, in every tournament I've been in. So if the Chicago Regionals only has 3 players, I will win. And I'm looking forward to that.
That's just math.
Math.
You know that. You know that right now. Awesome, man. That's all I got.
Thanks, Grim. That's all I got, too.
Thanks for coming on the show with me, Greg. Always love to have you. The people love you. The episodes that you're on are the ones that people listen to most, so the people say they love the Greg. Put Greg on your show. Become world famous. Like, that's how it works.
In my 10th grade chemistry teacher gave me the superlative most likely to be a game show host. And I'm just trying to live up to her expectations.
Wow.
So I'm going to consider a podcast guest close enough to syndicated game show host.
That's pretty much the same thing in my mind.
There you go. Especially on Shipment from Shiloh.
Especially on Shipment from Shiloh. That's right. I got to say all the stuff. Like,
you do. Sorry, I cut you off.
No, you're good. You're good. I'm going to have the music like play underneath that whole time.
Thanks, Foundation.
Thanks, Foundation, for the amazing theme music. You, listener, send us your questions and discussion ideas and things that you want to hear. You can find us at least twice a month at shipmentfromshiloh.podomatic.com. You can shoot me a tweet at GrahamCrackerGo. My username on all things Netrunner is PureFlight. Thanks for listening in. That's our show. This is Graham Carlson and Greg Gates signing off for the night. Stay safe, New Angeles, and join us next time on Shipment from Shiloh.
That's an ending.
That's an ending. If there was ever an ending.
And the words of Rebel Wilson.
Is that from like Pitch Perfect 3 or some shit?
She says that in the first one.
Whatever. I've seen those movies once.
Crushed it, probably. Not nailed it. I misquoted Rebel Wilson. She's
crushed it.
Twitter now.
Well, you done messed up, friend. And now Rebel Wilson hates you.
She's probably one of your regular listeners.
She probably does. What faction do you think Rebel Wilson would play?
That's a good BuzzFeed survey.
Top three decks. Rebel Wilson would play in Netrunner.
It's probably cold by now. Why didn't you eat it before we did this?
Oh, because I didn't want to eat during it. But then I also, like, it's getting late. So, like, I didn't want to, like, leave you hanging.
You're too kind, Graham.
This is the kind of friendship I want to have with you. Is the good kind.
I mean, Melissa has a passion for lukewarm food. My wife. And so when they say opposites attract, that is the opposite thing that attracted us, I guess. I will just eat all of my warm or hot food while she talks, and then she gets to enjoy her lukewarm food once I've already finished my meal.
See? It's totally complimentary.
Exactly.
One of us gets to eat our food while it's still hot, and the other one isn't forced to do the same thing. I need a greeting. Where you been at? Arrivederci. That's goodbye. That's not hello. It could just be an exclamation, I guess. Slap me sideways and call me Bongo. What's going on, Netrunners? I'm your host, Graham. Maybe I'll just use something from the new data pack. Amani Sinai, runners.
Rashida Jones, runners.
Oh, Rashida Jones is exactly right.
That's how I got fourth.
Yeah, that's true. You also got fourth by legitimately outplaying your opponents and winning games, unlike me. Oh, man. Dumb Geist, stupid. Mm-hmm. What kind of deck is that? Trash all your cards. Stupid.